Hey everybody, and welcome to the show. We're traveling down, it's a good 90 degrees. If you're traveling down the I-19, be careful, there's been a crash at the corner and everyone's backed up on the traffic. Here's Bob with the weather.
I feel like I'm on with Scott Rifen.
Yeah, except he's professional.
See, over here in the States, 19 degrees means it's friggin' freezing. Because we don't
that's because you live on a swamp, dude.
Well, yeah.
You're both okay?
Doing well, yeah.
Height?
Oh, I've just seen Paul's picture.
What have I got now? I don't even know.
A monkey with a jumper on and bad hair.
Okay, yeah. I succumbed to peer pressure and took the pig off for a little while. He'll be back.
Well, put that pig back on.
Hmm?
Put that pig back on. Do not succumb to peer pressure.
Yeah, don't let people boss you around.
You're not the boss of me.
Aren't I letting you boss me around by doing this?
Irony!
Irony, I guess. Sure.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. For Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
So how's everyone been these past 2 weeks?
Tickety boo, I'm on holiday, it's great.
Nice. Have you gotten to, did you get to see Ant-Man? Has everyone seen it yet?
No, probably going on Tuesday.
Okay.
I'll be posting my review while we're talking.
Okay. Is that going to be part of Ben's, or is that separate?
Yeah, you know,
I thought you were doing a round table.
Was it?
I thought you were doing a round table.
Well, I think you'd call it a triangle table, because it was just me, Bill, and Hero.
Huh. Even better. I think when you have more than four people, some people don't talk, because some are more shy than others. So three, that sounds perfect to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've just got the right dynamic here. We very rarely talk all over each other. Or do we, Sean? You're the editor.
No, in general we don't. There'll be some times where one of us will be talking and we have to sort of wait until we know that person is going to stop or that person has made their point, and then we cut in. But very rarely do we talk over each other. I mean, it's usually at the end of a conversation point that someone will come in and go make a comment, and that person will pick up on it, and then they'll go and let that other person speak. So very rarely do I have to edit out people talking over each other on this show.
So that makes life easy for you, then?
Oh, yeah. Well, these shows are a joy to edit. They really are. I have no problem with them. I love the outtake stuff that we get at the beginning. There's always humorous little bits where we bicker at each other.
Yeah. They're my favorites.
They go into the outtakes at the end, Andy. If you,
I was just gonna say, Paul, is it a joy to listen to?
It actually is. It is. My favorite Sean touch on it is if one of us totally and then he'll have the computer correct us.
Yeah,
now, you're saying this, Sean, but just the other day, I listened to my first ever Fantasticast just to piss Stephen off. So now I'm like, you don't know when I may do that again. So one day I will listen to him.
Okay.
I usually I find my listening is a matter of self-preservation. Like I want to try and make sure that I don't sound like too stupid.
That's me.
I long ago gave up doing that.
No, that's me as well. I have to go. Oh my god, I listened to one show I was on and I was actually coherent. So that shocks the hell out of me when that happens. I also, a lot of times since we're recording these so far in advance, it's kind of fun going back and listening to them to hear what we said about things and what our opinions were and, you know, what kind of, you know, secondary talk we had on the show. So
that's it's a useless exercise, but I like sometimes to try and remember what I said so I don't say things that are inconsistent in the future, but I still forget what I said.
It was there was a Facebook conversation the other day that you were having, Paul, with somebody about an episode where he was on about I didn't get entitlement from it at all, and I couldn't join it because I only vaguely remembered the conversation.
That was the John Glover episode.
Yeah, the invasive procedures. The one where he comes to the station and, you know, what's his name? Gary Shandling's wife's with him and the two Klingons, one of them played by Tim Russ. And
I remember the episode and I vaguely remember the conversation because I'm reading what he's saying. I'm going, how could you not get that from it? But then that's what's great about Star Trek, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Should we do a Deep Space Nine episode?
We should.
Do you feel the need?
I feel the need. The need for Quark to rip off Casablanca.
All right, I just posted my Ant-Man review. Andy, don't listen. It's got spoilers.
I'll listen to it on Wednesday. Oh, I was listening to your Muhammad Ali episode while I was decorating the bathroom. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
I've been waiting to do that book forever.
And then I texted you about something in it, and you and Mike Bailey were both, what are you on about? So don't belittle me for not listening to my own show.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, yeah. It's not that I didn't listen to it, it's just that I'm stupid.
It was good, very enjoyable. I really enjoyed listening to it.
When you're talking about Bin's episodes, whether I listen to the posted episode or not, I've listened to it many times because I'm the editor on it.
I'd have just accepted that you were being funny, like last night when we were back and forth and about the Terminator. I didn't think any of that conversation was serious.
Well, it was serious to the extent that we were actually talking about the...
We were having fun.
Or things in the movie. I mean, that was serious to that extent. It was never, oh, you're an idiot. You know?
Yeah, I don't think you're an idiot if you think Terminator 2 is better than 1. Because essentially it's the same film.
It's a more polished version of it, and I could see where somebody might like the more rough cut on it. You know, it's a little more, the first one's a little bit more edgy and rough, and the second one is a big budget. You know, it's the same movie with a big budget.
Yeah, they're both fun, don't get me wrong. I just think the first one, the plot holds together better.
Now, you haven't seen Genesis yet?
I have not seen the new one yet.
No.
The reviews on it were horrible, and I found it surprisingly enjoyable.
Yeah, the Empire podcast slagged it off completely.
I expected to be really disappointed in it because there were so many bad reviews. But, overall...
Did Matt Smith in it?
What's that?
Matt Smith in it?
Yeah. Yes, he is. I forgot that he's in it. He doesn't have a very big part. But he is in there.
You've not seen those leaked photos of him. Guy's got a third leg, dude.
I was just going to put in the that's what she said thing, but decided against it, and Andy jumped out and did us proud.
Oh, you bastard, I was just drinking, that came out my nose.
Dear God, sorry.
Great, oh,
that's all I need on my conscience. It's killing one of my fellow podcasters.
No, God, due to inhalation of apple juice. Oh, I wish we three could do this live, Wanda.
You know, I swear, sometime we will have to work something out where we will have to either make it up, like if they ever do the Eternal Con thing again, or if we could just find some way where all three of us can meet up in New York, that would be, you know, that'd be wonderful. You know, I figure we can do it eventually.
I'll go out on a limb there and I'll say if we can ever meet up in New York, I will find money to travel there.
That's big of you. We appreciate your sacrifice.
I'll just follow your lead. I'm not the one holding us back on meeting up in New York.
So basically you're saying it's our fault.
Well, you know what? I have to take my share of the blame for not coming to England to meet us.
Yeah, but you don't go to London. That's 3 hours away.
Or whatever part of the country that Sean lives in.
Yeah, I live in generic flyover country. That's where I live in. I don't have a place of residence. It's just, you know, you throw a dart at the center of the map of the Americas, and that's where Sean lives. There.
Well, did you ever see the map? Like, it's like the United States from a New Yorker's perspective, and it's like New York, and just to the west of that is New Jersey, to the west of that is Pennsylvania, and to the west of that is California.
Yeah, I could buy that. That seems to be, you know, I don't like the stereotype, but that seems to be kind of the mentality of people, not only on the East Coast, but on the West Coast as well. It's like, there's some states in there, I think they grow shit. Yeah, sure, that's, you know, it's just that long flight till you get to California and the chicks in the movies and whatever. That's... So Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine. Well, now, who's got the first episode? Is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
We ready to go into it?
Sure.
Now, before we go in, do we have any news, or are we going to go back to the Bible?
Let's just do the Bible, because I haven't even read any news. The only thing that I saw, like, on Facebook or anything, I guess, what's her name? Louise Fletcher had a birthday recently. That's all that I know. And that does it. And by the time this comes out, you know, it'll be her next birthday, so...
All
right. So yeah, we'll just go to the Bible.
All right. Good morning, good afternoon, or good night, everybody. I'm Paul Spataro, and you are listening to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, which is dedicated to going through the episodes of the most underrated Star Trek franchise, Deep Space Nine. And as always, I am joined by my two good buddies, Mr. Sean Engel.
Hello, everyone.
And Mr. Andy Leyland.
Hello.
How are you boys doing today?
Excellent, judging by the 40 minutes that we've talked before we started recording.
Oh, God, man. You know, you're not supposed to pull back that curtain. We just got on the line.
And we let right into it.
It's an absolute cold start. We have no idea what each other have been doing for the past 30 minutes. We just go right into this gung-ho, ready to talk about Deep Space Nine. That's how professional we
do. That's the only thing we do is every moment of our lives is put out there on the podcast, or it's not worth listening to.
See, basically, we don't really give two sheds about, you know, what each other are doing. It's Deep Space Nine all the time. You know, personal interaction out the door. You know, how your family's been, who cares? We don't mind. Deep Space Nine. That's all we're focused on, like a laser.
Because we're in this for the money.
Exactly. It
has nothing to do with being friends.
I'm expecting that check to show up at any minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, DeMonzo's making big dough now, so he can afford to shoot us a little stipend every once in a while.
I liken us to what they used to say about the Boston Red Sox. You know, you had 25 players on the team. They said 25 players, 25 limousines. Nobody would travel together. Nobody gave a shit about anybody. That's us.
We don't talk to each other when we're not doing the show. We refuse to have a dressing room that's not bigger.
Well, I think it's in my contract. I have to have the biggest dressing room or I wouldn't be on the show.
And I have to have the biggest trailer.
Actually, I think it was in the contract where I begged you guys to let me be on the show with you. But that's besides the point.
Well, if you listen to the opening crawl, which Andy so wonderfully put together, you know, you kind of have to listen to the end where we kind of tacked your name on, so yeah.
No, added Paul Spataro.
Well, that's cool. That's, I mean, for anybody listening who is unaware of it, Andy and Sean had the idea for the show, and Andy loved it, so he immediately started to put together the opener, and then we were talking, and I kind of just invited myself to be on, and then he had to just shoehorn me in.
I think
that
Sean
is the reality of it. I mean, let's be fair.
Yeah, I did. Basically, once I got the trailer for it, and of course, if you don't know, and by the time this comes out, it'll be more than a year since we actually did the first Assistant Editors Month, where we came out with the first episode of this. And technically, it wasn't even the first episode of this, because we started with Way of the Warrior. And, you know, at the time, we were like, okay, the Two True Freaks are gonna be gone. Why don't we do our own Star Trek show? We'll do Deep Space Nine, and we did an episode of Enterprise. Now, I don't know, after, you know, Firefly and Magnum and Game of Thrones and, you know, what
Buffy and Angel.
Buffy and Angel.
Mrs. King.
Yes.
Scarecrow, Mrs. King. Oh, really? Are we doing Scarecrow, Mrs. King as well as Magnum P.I.? Because that'll just be awesome.
Don't you know we had to? We've got to get Bruce Boxleitner in there.
Oh, I thought we were shoehorning Babylon 5 in for that.
We'll work that into. But I don't even know where I was going. But, you know, by the time this comes out, I guess... now I'm just rambling. Let's get on with it. It's early and I have a train of thought.
Should we talk about playing God, or we do the news, or should we do the Bible?
Let's go to the next section.
Let's do Bible studies for the week.
So the next section of the Bible is giving the definition or description of Deep Space Nine, the station. The station, designated DS9 by Starfleet, was assembled haphazardly over several years by Cardassian and Bajoran work teams and anyone else who happened to offer services at a premium. It was used by the Cardassians primarily to monitor mining operations on Bajor and to service incoming and outgoing crews. About 200 people, mostly Bajorans, still live there. By episode 3, there will be about 50 Starfleet officers and crewmen stationed there. When the Cardassians abandoned Bajor, they stripped the station of all advanced technology and defense capabilities, and the Starfleet team has a huge job of making it operational again. In fact, it will never work up to our requirements and will always be causing the engineering crew a lot of headaches. The Operations Control Center, OPS, the heart of the space station, is a multi-tiered facility lined with computer and life support systems, tactical controls, the master communications panel, and a transporter pad to beam on and off the station. Further design specifications to follow. It is always a hub of activity as ships move in and out of the wormhole. There are shuttle bays for smaller vessels, larger ships dock outside, and crews have access to the station via airlocks and interconnecting tunnels. On a given day, there might be anywhere from 10 to 300 visitors to DS9 as ships come through, explorers, scientists, merchants, spies. Most of the visitors stay on their ships, but there are special quarters for some guests. One aspect of life on the space station hasn't changed since the departure of the Cardassians. During their tenure, they sold commercial concessions to the highest bidder to provide services to the mining crews. The result is the Promenade. Unlike any space interior ever seen on Star Trek, it's somewhere between a freeport and a flea market, bustling with aliens of all sorts when a ship's in. Intriguing and unusual characters at every bend. There's gambling and smuggling, alien grifters at work here, bars with sexual holosuites upstairs, right next to traditional ship stores, a Bajoran temple, and a kiosk serving live food. Part of the job of the Starfleet team will be to try to tame this honky-tonk atmosphere. And that's the description of DS9 from the DS9 Bible.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty accurate description. I really didn't see anything that, you know, just screamed that this is vastly different from, you know, what the original concept was to it actually showing up in the show. I did notice one of the things, and this kind of surprised me, when they said transporter pads, they spelled pad with two D's. Is that, you know, is that...
Oh, right, yeah, that's... You know those little things that they used to have in the hands? Mm-hmm. They were called pads with a double D.
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought, you know.
Yeah, so maybe it's just getting...
British spelling.
Yes, it is. No, we had U's.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be port.
So yeah, it would be P-A-U-D. Oh, yeah, I'm surprised in America, Paul, your name's not spelled P-A-L.
Well, my niece does call me P-U.
Whereas we just call you F-U, I don't.
Not to his face.
Somehow Uncle Paul got turned into UP, and then she thought it was funnier to turn UP into PU.
PU! Like Pepe Le PU!
Yes.
So, I think we've got off the Bible.
Yeah, well, what I thought is well done by them is they gave the skeleton for DS9, but I think they left themselves a lot of room that if stories required it, they can kind of vary off of it a little bit.
You know what's impressive about this? The way that it's actually written in the Bible that you just read. It's almost the opening narration to Babylon 5.
Shh, don't let Peter David.
It's a port of call. Oh, I'm doing this from memory, so forgive me. It's a port of call, a home away from home for aliens, diplomats, ambassadors, entrepreneurs, something else. And it's a dangerous place. But it's our last best hope for peace or something. So it is pretty much the opening narration to Babylon 5.
And do we think that this... Because I'm trying to remember the thing behind Babylon 5. Wasn't it that Straczynski pitched that to Paramount first?
Yeah, Straczynski always maintains he pitched Babylon 5 to Paramount before Warner Brothers bought it. And then suddenly Deep Space Nine came along. Pillar and Berman retort by saying that Deep Space Nine was in the planning stages from before Gene Roddenberry died. Now, I don't know what the timeline on this is. It was Babylon 5 1993 or 94? And this was 93, 94. Mm-hmm. But I never really had a problem with it, because it's like saying, well, you can't have a cop show on NBC because ABC have got a cop show.
Exactly. And the shows, even though they've got similar setups, you know, a far-flung future space station where, you know, various aliens interact and things, the feels of the show were different. Obviously, you've still got the sort of Star Trek sort of utopian theme for Deep Space Nine, and Babylon 5 had a more sort of frontier, corporate-driven type feel. So there's, you know, if you're saying that Pillar and Behrman ripped off Straczynski, I think that's doing a disservice. I think they're two separate shows, and, you know, it's just a way for people to argue. And besides, you get that all the time. There were a couple of years where they had movies that came out that had similar themes to them. There was a couple of years they had a couple of volcano movies that came out. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of years that they had the asteroid, you know, going to destroy the Earth, Deep Impact and Armageddon. So it's not uncommon that you'll get same themes and same ideas coming up on separate shows. So
yeah, and I'm just going to make a quick correction before you have to have the computer correct it for me, because I said Peter David instead of Straczynski.
Oh, what?
I have to have the computer do it.
Oh, we'll just... Sure.
No, you'll just edit out my correction and then add in the computer to make me look silly.
Maybe I will. Maybe I'll completely forget about it. I can't be certain.
All right. Well, I guess that entry from the Bible doesn't really give us too much to talk about, because it is. It would almost give us a lot more to talk about if it was incorrect now, if they changed it at some point before the show went on the air. But it's pretty much an accurate description, so there's not a lot to say about it.
Yeah, so far the Bible has been pretty, you know, its translation from the text to the screen hasn't been that much of a variation. It's been pretty spot on, so I'm certain eventually we'll find something that we'll be able to argue about a little bit more, but yeah, so far it's been pretty much a one-to-one translation.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, this week's episode is Season 2, Episode 17, Playing God.
A microscopic universe threatens to destroy the station.
As it grows, it's displacing our own universe.
2 minutes, this thing is going to expand.
While a startling discovery...
I found indications of life.
...poses a disturbing dilemma.
It's us or them. We have to destroy it.
You can't just wipe out a civilization.
Now their fate is in the hands of a young recruit.
You're talking about precision flying through a wormhole.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Directed by David Livingston. The teleplay is by Jim Trombetta and Michael Pillar. A story by Jim Trombetta. It was originally aired on February 27th, 1994, and has guest stars Jeffrey Blake as Arjun, Ron Taylor as the Klingon chef, Richard Poe as Gul Evek, and Chris Nelson Norris as Trajak, not Charles Nelson Reilly. And the plot goes something like this. a young Trill man arrives on the station. He is to study with Jadzia Dax, and the prospect makes him ill at ease and defensive. He has heard rumors that Dax hosts have been very harsh mentors, especially Curzon. He hopes to please Jadzia, since he must get a recommendation from her if the Trill joining committee is to accept him as a host. When Arjun meets Jadzia Dax, he is surprised to find her so laid back and free-spirited. Arjun's first job is to accompany Dax through the wormhole in a runabout. An accident occurs and the two Trills bring the runabout back to the station damaged. There is a strange mass of matter attached to it. Chief O'Brien removes the mass and contains it securely for further study. Meanwhile, Dax has been getting to know Arjun. He seems aloof but preoccupied with what other people think of him, and may be applying for a symbiote to please his father and others. He seems to have few interests or goals. Dax is nervous about confronting Arjun about his motivations. When she confides in her friend Sisko, he reminds her about her time training under the notorious Curzon. He was very hard on her and challenged her confidence in herself. Trouble starts when the unidentified mass in the lab is released from its containment field. O'Brien is annoyed to find out that the station has a pest control problem. There is an infestation of Cardassian voles, and they are beginning to short out crucial systems, including the power source for the science lab containment fields. When Dax and Arjun find the matter, it has begun to emit an eerie glow. They run calculations and realize the matter may actually be a tiny universe. It is expanding quickly and will soon pose a danger to the station. The crew prepares to destroy the universe, but are hailed when Dax finds that it holds signs of life. Finds that it holds signs of life. As Sisko ponders the matter, Dax speaks to Arjun about his performance. She realizes that Curzon's high expectations for her actually helped her become stronger and more ready to become a host. Before she joined the Dax, Jadzia was shy and sensitive, and Curzon often reduced her to tears. Nonetheless, in the end, she got her symbiote, and she encourages Arjun to strive for more. Sisko has weighed the options and has decided the proto-universe must be removed from Deep Space Nine. Dax and Arjun board a runabout to ferry the universe back through the wormhole. She allows Arjun to take the helm, a challenge that he accepts. As they rush through the wormhole, the expanding proto-universe becomes unstable, making the runabout difficult to fly. Arjun can barely control it, and Dax offers to take over. He resolves to do the job himself, and as he brings them out of danger and releases the little universe out into space, he proves himself and earns his positive recommendation from Jadzia Dax. The end. Now, I guess I'll just give you my initial thoughts on this first. I really liked the Arjun Dax story. I really thought they paid short shrift to the new little mini universe story. I thought they had a science fiction concept there that was or could have been intriguing, and they just kind of used it as a MacGuffin instead. So I have mixed feelings about the episode, because I do like the human or the symbiote part of the story. And I thought it was a good character study and well done, well acted. But the science fiction aspect of it, I thought, fell short. Boys?
Go ahead.
I thought Terry Farrell owned it. I thought when she's given a chance to shine, she's really, really good. And she's really, really good in this episode. She carries it on her own brilliantly. I loved the little subplot with the voles, which was very funny, especially Quark's reaction to them. And we get a lovely shot of Kira's ass, so that's always a bonus. But yeah, the pocket universe stuff was kind of just tossed off. And for Star Trek, there was no real moral dilemma to it. Like, are we killing a race of people here? And Kira's all, why don't we just step on it like we do with ants? And Odo's all, I don't step on ants, they're life forms. But they didn't do anything with it. It was an interesting idea, like Paul said, that they could have explored more, but they didn't. And I think that's possibly because of the three plots going through this episode, it is the least interesting. It's an interesting idea had it been developed. Yeah, had it been developed further, it could have been fascinating. But in this particular show, it's a C plot. and they don't really have a lot of time to spend on it because they've got these other two plots that are going along at the same time. So one of them ends up getting short shrift, and in this case it's that one, which is a shame. But the Dax Arjun stuff is actually really, really good, and I love the Klingon I love the Klingon cook.
Yeah, well, that's all we're going to see of him. He's done.
He's never in it again.
He made two appearances and done.
Oh, because he's brilliant.
Which is surprising because the Klingons have such a big presence in the show, especially in relating with Dax, as we'll see, I think, later on in the season. I kind of have to agree with you as well. We got this... the two episodes that we had that focused in on Dax, the first season one, Dax specifically, and then invasive procedures, wanted to tell these tales that would advance the idea of troll society and what trolls are like, and they did marginally good jobs. I think we finally got an episode that really told us what it was like to be a trill, what the responsibilities of being joined were, the kind of process that people have to go to, and, you know, the interaction between Dax and the sort of wanting to please his father, naive young boy trying to make sure that he does good, was one of the more engaging parts of the show. But the scientific aspect of this new universe being born was just completely overlooked. And the fact that it's... Go ahead, Paul.
I'm sorry, but did I misinterpret what was going on there? Because it seems to me like if this universe was rapidly expanding, effectively this universe's Big Bang, wouldn't throwing it on the other side of the wormhole just kind of like do cause untold damage to that side of the wormhole?
That was my thought as well.
You know, no, you're exactly right. Yeah,
isn't that just like taking your garbage and putting it under the carpet?
That was my thing. It was the ending felt like a sort of not in my backyard ending. You know, I don't want this horrible thing happening here. Let's take it through this cosmic wormhole and put it, you know, 70,000 light years away, so it destroys that part of the universe first, and then, you know, it's okay. And I think it also, saying that it's the beginning of an entire universe, that's a lot. You know, if they would have said it's the beginning of a galaxy, that might have been more understandable, because galaxies technically pass through each other, you know, through random orbits and everything. And say that's a developing galaxy, I think that would have worked a bit better. But yeah, it did have this ending where it's like, okay, we've got this thing that might have life in it, and it's rapidly expanding. If we let it go, it's going to destroy our sector and who knows what else. So let's just toss it over here where we won't have to deal with it. That was a poor decision to end the show on.
Yeah. But I think what I said is the way I view it is they just had it as like a MacGuffin. It really, they didn't want to have it as a science fiction concept that you'd ponder and wonder what you're going to do with it and all of that. They just wanted it as something that Dax and Arjun had to take care of together.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a poor decision.
Yeah, it was the problem that those two had to work on together for her to realize that he's not a big old stiff like we think he is, and for him to realize that she's not just the flighty playgirl that he thinks she is. And it's an excellent idea that they could have done a lot more with. They've done proto-universes, mini-universes, pocket-universes before in Star Trek, haven't they?
I've got to be certain.
Isn't there an episode?
Didn't Wesley make one?
Yeah, in an episode of Next Gen, yeah. I thought that as well. But yeah, and especially when you've got Sisko invoking the Borg and saying, is it assimilation and all of that, and then they just toss it through the wormhole and don't give a toss about it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the C-plot didn't work at all. But the Voles plot was really funny.
Yeah, the Voles plot was purely comic relief.
Yeah, especially when you go from Sisko saying, I want them alive, to kill them! Kill them now!
Nah, see, I thought my favorite thing was when O'Brien came up with the sonic thing to destroy it, and it made Quark fall on the floor writhing in pain.
Well, and deafened him as well, you know. He aims at him and he starts that wonderful high-pitched scream that only Armin Shimmerman can do, and drops to the floor, and then after that he's knocking his head around. It's like, what?
As we've talked about before, it's the characters and the dialogue that salvage an episode that's just fair to middling. And there's a brilliant bit in the middle of this with Gull What's the girl's name? Yvek?
Yvek, yeah.
Because he comes back, doesn't he? This actor comes back as this Cardassian, as they start building up the Cardassian sub-characters. His line about, yeah, they are annoying, aren't they, was brilliantly deadpan. And the conversation Quark has with Earl in Quark's bar was really funny as well, where he basically says, "Ah, you've blown it. Get over it, kid."
Now, how do we have that and not have a Morn sighting?
No, the Morn was in there. He was just sort of, you know,
he's in the background.
Was he? Because I couldn't find him there.
Yeah, he's over Dax's shoulder in one shot, mm-hmm. somewhere, I think. But yeah, he is here.
Yeah, he's very much in the background, but yeah, I did see him in this episode.
I have to consider adding half a star to this then.
All right, well, there we go.
I love Terry Farrell's brilliant in it, especially her opening scene.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that they're
hashtag boobgate.
They're making her independent of Curzon. They're making it clear that they're not the same person. And I like that aspect of it. They are, but they're not.
Well, you've got to kind of figure if Jadzia is what she says, that she was somewhat timid and reserved prior to getting the Dax symbiote, that her outgoingness is somehow predicated on the idea that the symbiote is in her. But I like the fact that they come back to it and say that the symbiote doesn't completely overwhelm your personality. Your personality is still yours, but it's a melding the two. And so you get the fact that this is a different character, but there are aspects of that character that may still be the same. Her sort of free-spirited, the fact that the first thing you see of her in this episode is her in a towel and this big hunky guy who supposedly she was wrestling with, exercising with, of course. Yeah, they were,
and we're going to see that developed further when we get to Ezra Dax.
Mm-hmm. So it's like I said, this show did for me. This show advanced the idea of the Troll Society, and specifically Dax in specific, more than the two previous episodes that focused in on her character. I really enjoyed what they tried to do with the Troll race and the concept of this slug being inside of you, more than we did, you know, with the invasive procedures episode.
Is that, have we killed it?
I don't know.
I think Sean just killed it. I blame Sean.
I do think we've got that issue again where I liked watching it because I thought Terry Farrell was really good in it. And I do like Dax as outgoing and friendly much more than boring Serene Science Officer Dax. I like that she's fleshing her character out this year. Like, we've had scenes with her having her feet up in Ops while she drinks a cup of coffee and stuff like this, where she takes this really stiff, boring guy out and tries to get him hammered on their equivalent of Bloody Mary's black hole, wasn't it? So all of that was really good, and I enjoyed it, and I thought the Vol subplot was really well played, particularly by Avery Brooks, who seemed to have a lot of fun with it. But the C plot lets it down a bit, and it's not, there's not really a lot to talk about other than the really great character bits and lines of dialogue. You know, Armin Shimerman steals every scene he's in, as usual. Odo's not in this one very much, but everyone else at least has a moment, even if it's only bending over to get a Vol and waggling your ass at us. Thanks, Kira.
I read on this one, and I think it was on Memory Alpha, but I could be wrong, and this really surprised me. I read that the C-plot was originally the A-plot, and somebody went in and swapped it, and they were actually disappointed with the result of that. Which I guess that may actually line up with what we're saying. If the C plot had been given a little bit more attention, maybe it would have, really presented us with some quality science fiction questioning. But the way it played out and how that plot fell short, you could see where you wouldn't want to have it as your focus.
But if they had had an episode prior that sort of dealt with the idea of a proto universe, and if it is causing havoc with our universe, is it morally right to get rid of it, or do we need to take it back to where it was? But the fact that they didn't address that, or they just sort of glossed over all that, it diminished the idea. So I think you're absolutely right. If they would have focused more on that, I think it would have worked as well. But I'm glad for myself that they focused more in on the Dax and the Trill Society, because that was more interesting to me. The proto-universe is just a one-episode idea that they can tackle in a single episode, and if they want to tackle it, they could just put it aside. But the Dax character is something that needs to be advanced and needs to grow on, so putting in little seeds and developing her character more, I think, would have been more important. So I appreciate that they did that for this episode.
Yeah, I really like the fact that they're making the Trills just a more complex race. You know, the way it was originally presented, at least the way I interpreted it, it seemed like the hosts were almost like farmed. You know, like it was almost, they were almost like slaves to the symbiote. And now they're making that a more complex concept, where it's, no, not only are they not slaves to it, they strive to be there. They want this, you know, and that there's, you know, thousands of candidates for each one that gets placed. So I kind of like that. And then I like the whole concept that they played with here, where, you know, he might be doing it just to please other people as opposed to really wanting it himself.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they came up with the Trill idea, and then they've realized that, wait a minute, this is actually very akin to slavery. We need to establish that that's not what this is. And they've used Dax's character to establish that it's much better than that, that there is something in it for both parties. And I think they ultimately do establish the Trill as being quite an interesting race, whereas their initial conception, I think, was on Next Generation. Hmm. You were a little bit, wait a minute, so these people are just given to the slug?
Yeah, and didn't initially one of the Trill slugs, wasn't it implanted in Riker, if I'm remembering?
Well, there was the Trill that the Doctor fell in love with, and then something happened to the host, and they temporarily put it into Riker's body. And then there was kind of the question of, well, does she love does she love Riker now because he's the host for it? And at that point, the symbiote totally took over the host body. There was no host personality involved. And then from there, the symbiote was put into a female host, and that created the societal question. Well, you know, can she still be in love with the host now that it's in a female body? And they ended up separating and parting ways.
See, this is one of the things that I really enjoy about Deep Space Nine, is the fact that we have so many different alien races that were just sort of touched upon in Next Gen or even in the original series that get fleshed out, that we get more development of them. You know, the Klingon race, the Ferengi. The Ferengi were a joke in Next Generation. And because of Deep Space Nine, we got such rich character development, you know, not only with Quark, but with the Negus and his family and, you know, his brother and everything. So this is one of the reasons, again, why I'm upset when people dismiss Deep Space Nine, because it does have this wonderful amount of character building for all these sort of disparate alien races that would have been just completely forgettable and throwaway, but are brought to the forefront here on the show. The Cardassians as well. You know, the Cardassians showed up in Deep Space Nine quite often, and they were just, you know, black hats. Now they've become interesting, conniving, and really fun characters to get behind.
Yeah, I had some thoughts about the Cardassians and how they're portrayed, and I think it's better for our next episode, because that's a more Cardassian-centric episode.
Definitely.
I don't know. Anybody else have any more thoughts on this one?
I only had one thing. I'm not certain if this, you know, they had the little joke when, you know, O'Brien was trying to get rid of the voles, and Dr. Bashir, you know, gave him a little package and said it worked in Hamlin. I was wondering if that was the same flute, because it looked very familiar. I wonder if that was the same flute that they used in Inner Light and that was just a prop that they passed over there. Any idea?
See, I didn't see anything.
I didn't see anything in the companion about it, and it might have just been me going, hey, I wonder if that's that. It may not be.
I got nothing on that, I'm afraid.
That's okay. This is just me being obsessive over stupid things, and
that's the whole show, is us all being obsessive over stupid things.
Well, there you go then.
You've just described podcasting.
Ah, true. Alright, well, do we want to go ahead and rate it?
Yeah, go on, Paul, you did the synopsis, you get to go first.
Alright, I think with this one, you know, we have the subplots that kind of, well, we have the one subplot that's just comic relief, kind of, and then we have the other subplot that is woefully under thought out. We have the main plot that I think is a great character bit. I think it gives us something to think about, not so much from a science fiction point of view, but just a character study and a societal point of view. So I think that brings it up. I think it takes what might otherwise be an average episode and makes it better than average. So I'm going to say 3 stars.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a mostly agreement. Obviously, I don't want to speak for Sean. I'm going to go for 3 as well. I think the Terry Farrell bits and Kira waggling her ass bring this one up to a 3. Yeah, it's not a great episode, but it doesn't suck because of the development for the Jadzia Dax character. Well, and Armin Shimerman gets half a star for his scream.
Yeah, we're going to be in complete agreement here. I'm going to give it a 3 as well. I will go for the Terry Farrell in a towel thing over Kira. Not that I'm complaining about Kira either. I mean, that was...
No. You just said, let's put Terry Farrell in a towel over Kira. And you've just made this a 4-star episode.
4-star? 5-star?
I'll be back. Hold on.
Sean will be in his bunk.
Good thing we got the trailer.
But, you know, like I said, I enjoyed this. Like I said, I think it advanced the troll, the idea of the troll society. It did a better job at showcasing Dax than the 2 prior episodes that tried to deal with her and the troll society. So I really enjoyed it. It was kind of disappointing that the scientific aspect of the show got kind of left behind, the whole idea of this proto-universe going to destroy this sector of space, and all we do is, you know, send it through the wormhole and everything will be fine. We don't have to watch it now destroy all these life forms, and I'm certain it's never even mentioned ever again. So yeah, a 3, good episode, but nothing really spectacular. I'm certain by the time we get to the end of the season, I'll be, you know, wondering, okay, playing God, what's this all about? Oh, okay, it's that one. And yes, Morin did show up in the episode, so that probably raised up a 0.5-star for me as well.
Yeah, I am disappointed that I didn't see Morin, because I was looking for him and I did not spot him in that shot.
Just barely there in the background. I think in the next episode he's definitely more visible.
Oh, he is. He has no part in the plot in the next episode, but you do see him much more clearly.
Good.
We have one piece of email. Do we want to read that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, it's from our buddy, our only listener, Gene Hendricks.
You're my only listener, you're my only listener, but I'm not actually your only listener. That doesn't really scam, does it?
Wait, was that They Might Be Giants?
Yeah.
There you go, okay.
Well, no, it was me, but...
Well, shut up.
See, I saw it more as you making a little of Andy than the other way around.
Yeah. Carry on!
Anyway, the email is titled, Not Everyone's a Nice Guy, or Why Some People Don't Like DS9. Andy, Paul, and Sean.
Yay! Almarine!
This episode is one that seems to symbolize why some people don't like DS9, and the reason is that there are some people in the universe that are out for themselves. They don't accept the decisions from on high and plod along like good little automatons. Personally, I can see the same thing in other versions of Star Trek. but it seems to be more pronounced in DS9 and just makes it a better show for me. The fact that Barat only wanted to be joined and will not accept anything or anyone that tells him otherwise makes him a believable character, in my opinion. Most times, you would have him turn around after he was joined and say, "Oh, you were right, let's undo this." But that doesn't happen here, which I liked. He was the Dr. Doom mentality. His way is the right way, and everyone else is crazy for not seeing it. True, it was only an okay episode, with the everyone must be off the station because reasons, which is the only thing that made this plot possible. There were some great performances like Avery Brooks, I'm sounding like a broken record here, and John Glover. The rest of the cast, though, were okay. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the show. It just wasn't outstanding. One thing you guys glossed over in this was that Quark was trying to sell data chains to the Klingons. Yes, they had ulterior motives for coming on the station, but saying he was trying to sell our Jadzia for profit is a little too far to go. Gene. And Gene is the host of the Hammer Strikes podcast, the Quantum Cast, Anime Freaks, and you can find him all over the internet and Facebook.
So basically what he's saying is Quark's motivation for this was to sell data to the Klingons, and it just so happened that John Glover's character was tagging along with them and, you know, decided to, you know, he had the ulterior motives, and Quark's motives were only to sell stuff to the Klingons. He had no idea that this guy was going to come in and take the drill host out of
Yeah, that's what Gene is saying, and if that's the case, I prefer that, but I did not get that from the episode, and I'd have to rewatch it to try and see if I agree that they made that clear enough. I think they did make it clear enough, because none of the three of us saw that. And we're brilliant, so...
Well, I cannot argue with that.
If we didn't see it, it doesn't exist.
I can only agree with you on that. That's true.
But yeah, I mean, you know, maybe we did miss something and criticized something that was taken care of, and sometimes those things can be taken care of with a simple throwaway line, and it's possible there was one and we missed it. So I can't say I'm going to go back and watch the episode again to try and see if I missed it, so I'll have to just accept Gene's word for it.
Yeah, I'll go with it. Yeah, Gene, we trust your opinion, even though ours is absolutely correct. So
I usually only trust Gene's opinion when he says that I'm right.
I always trust Gene's opinion. He's got a great voice.
That is true.
I wouldn't argue with that.
I have no idea where to go from there, but I'll completely agree with you.
Next time! That's what we'll do.
Yes, do it, Andy.
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, we not only get the person who shot JR visiting the station, but we'll always have Cardassia.
Oh, was that Knots Landing? No, that's Dallas.
No, that was Dallas.
Okay, there you go.
Are we doing Dallas now? Are we adding that to the list?
Well, no, because J. David Weiner and I already did, you know, our podcast about Dallas and Dynasty, so. Yes, it was an April Fool's thing. We did a couple of, oh, never mind. I'll talk about it next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
All right, goodbye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.